Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So it's all for play for still?
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast. We're back, and we're delighted to be back after a second win in a row under Unai Emery. And I have to say, Paddy, what a load of shite. The league and FIFA and everything have purposely put this World Cup in place to stop us from winning the league. It's always about a big six bias, and you never hear that in your normal media, but we're going to tell you that today. That was my joke today in work. About this World Cup coming at an inopportune time. But look, it is great that... what's going on there? I'm getting feedback on my... Oh, can anyone else hear that? Or was it just me?
I can hear it.
You can hear it as well? I have no idea where that came from. I was getting feedback of the show. But as I say, two wins in a row under Unai Emery going into the break. And lots to work on, but lots of green shoots, Paddy.
Yes, and look... You joke there in jest about going into the break, but I cast your mind back to the last game of last season where we were totally pissed off after throwing away a 2-goal lead and then had to go, 8 or 9 weeks with no game. So to go 6 weeks after the game, after grinding one out yesterday, things are not so bad. You're only as good as your last game. Your last memory is your last game, albeit we'll remember Man United a few days before it, but... We've beaten Brighton. He's got 6 points out of six, and onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I can't ask for any more, you know. Like you see all the tweets that have been going around recently. And look, we're not going to... This podcast is obviously... We will talk about Brighton and so on. But, you know, we had 9 points under Steven Gerrard. And we have 9 points since he was sacked. You know, like if you come to me and said, which games will we get more points from? Leeds and Forest... are United and Brighton. And like, that's just the caliber. And yes, you can call it bad luck or good luck or whatever we want to say. But the reality of it is we're playing way better football now. And there was a massive, massive brigade within the established spaces, media, print media, whether it be broadcast radio, who still to this before this game were saying, oh, they should have given Steven Gerrard another chance. And we had a man on commentary at the weekend who couldn't get out of his way wanting Aston Villa to lose to Brighton at the weekend. So I just want to kind of, I think it's important. We're not going to go too far down the rabbit hole on this one, Paddy, but
I put it to you this way, Neil, right? There's many times I hang up off the podcast here on a Monday evening or a Sunday evening or wherever it is we record, and I go to bed and I go, I made an absolute bollocks of that. If Jamie Carragher didn't go to bed last night embarrassed, there's something fucking wrong. He even asked for the opinion of the Brighton fans behind him at one stage. It was cringe of the highest order. Yeah. So, yeah. You know,
I usually have good time for Carragher. I usually do. I couldn't understand where it was. Like, it was from minute one. Well, actually, it was from minute one after they scored the goal, which we will get onto in a moment, which is completely calamitous. And I love the breakdown that there's, that a couple of sites have had, Nick, because they've gotten it absolutely spot on. Well, they've gotten it exactly as I saw it in real time as well. I was shouting at my screen, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, look, as I say, it wasn't an easy listen to the commentary at the weekend. And sometimes I kind of nearly prefer when we're not on TV, because you can maybe go away and completely 100% legally source a stream from somewhere else that might have a commentator that you've never heard of, that kind of changes it up a small bit. Because, look, as I say,
I was lucky in the fact that my commentary came from Mark Regan and Ian Taylor, because I couldn't watch the match live because I was at a match. Yeah. So it was refreshing to listen to two of our own, and it was fresh eyes because I hadn't seen any of it. As you know, because the match I went to kicked off at 3:00. We got hammered, by the way, and I got hammered too.
Yeah.
But look, so we had our FAE Cup final here in Ireland yesterday, and my team were hammered 4-0. But good day out. But missed the Villa, watched it back, enjoyed the commentary from Mark Regan and Ian Taylor, and just got those sound bites from Jamie Carragher, which were embarrassing. But I totally get what you're saying, and you also get the armchair experts, you know, the Liverpool and Man United fans that message you and tell you how shit Villa are after a game, and they've only got that sample set of one game. So the Liverpool fans were quiet for a year while we had Gerrard at the helm and weren't saying too much, but they'll be back, no doubt. And that annoyed me. I couldn't go to a pub full of Liverpool fans and watch a game, because it's just listening to drivel, or Man United fans for that matter.
Anyway, let's move on from that. Aston Villa won 2-1. It didn't look like they were going to win they were going to win at all after the first 49 seconds or something in the game when we went down 1-0. But there was something strange, Paddy. Like that goal itself. I don't blame Emi Martinez much for that goal. I actually think that goal is both centre halves are to blame for that goal. Both centre-halves, I think, are to blame for that goal, because neither of the two of them knew where to be. They didn't spread far enough. They didn't give him any angle. And Douglas Luiz was not expecting that pass. So, yes, you can blame Martinez for the pass coming to him. And probably, I think, at that stage, you just abandon. You're in the first minute of the game. You're okay to abandon the tactic of play it out short and langer it up the field as far as you possibly can, I think, within the first 49 seconds. But that pass comes into Douglas Luiz. He gets the ball taken off him. And Alexis McAllister won't have an opportunity, he won't have an opportunity like that to absolutely put his foot through the ball with no one around him in a situation like that again. I'd say for many's a long year, but not the best start, Paddy. But what was your view on it?
No, not the best start. I think you're completely right. There's four culpable players in there. You've mentioned the two centre halves. Emmy, I think, picked the wrong option. Dougie was arcing for a run to maybe go outside the centre half. But as he went to go for that run, the ball was played, so he was completely... He'd lost a couple of yards as it was. Could have possibly been a free. You've seen him given two.
Don't seem given that to Villa Belly.
No. A lot of people call now Emmy for the actual goal itself. He just gave him the eyes. That's exactly what happened there. Unfortunately, nobody was quick enough to recover and get across in front of him. So, one of those things, but all part of the learning process that we can talk about this on the day of a win. This I watched with great interest last week against Man United in the home game, and absolutely enjoyed the first 42, 43 minutes, whatever it was.
That's what I was going to say, first 42, 43 seconds of this game.
In the United game, everything that went short was perfect. And the one time we went long, we conceded from it.
Yeah.
So we weren't prepared for a long ball, and we were totally thrown off kilter. The ball, I know there was maybe one or two passages of play, but it was the first time we went long in the game. And then, look, yesterday, as I said, I was just arrived in the stadium to that news. The match just kicked off, and then Twitter pings Aston Villa 1-0 down, and I'm like, I'm not going to let them ruin my day today. But thankfully, it was the team I went to see that ruined my day, and Villa were able to recover from it.
Yeah, and but look, as I say, and that was the great thing about it, and that's where what I want to frame this whole podcast around is that, you know, lapse of concentration. Aston Villa do get themselves back into the game, and Aston Villa started playing some really good football. We started, so first of all, before we go any further, there's a man's comment here I want to pop up. Thank you so much, Matt. I really, really appreciate that. And I just realized I haven't drank a pint in the podcast in a while, and my acting gig is coming up soon. And you can be guaranteed after that there will be lots of points on podcasts because it is. And in case anybody is wondering, my hands are all covered in fake blood from we were doing a fight scene tonight, would you believe? So that's a little I think you might be able to see it in the side of my head there as well. There's a small bit of fake blood. The stuff doesn't come off very easily either. So I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyway, a digression. Complete another digression. Thanks very much, Matt. And then really, really appreciate that. But what I was getting at there, Paddy, was that the Aston Villa usually don't recover from those situations. You know, that usually ends up being a 4-0 loss in an Aston Villa game, or a 4-1 loss, and you know, they don't recover from it. They don't have the leadership to pick themselves up off the floor. Now, I did a team sheet tantrum from the car, and we were trying to figure out what kind of formation we were going to play. And for me, it kind of seemed like it was that 4-4-2-2-2 again, but obviously with different personnel in this instance. And why I'm getting at here is because the game kind of came to us afterwards. We flooded out that middle of midfield. We didn't allow Moyes Caicedo get on the ball too much. I thought McAllister was still very good throughout the course of the whole game. But when we got the opportunity to play the ball through the centre, we were able to do that. And our first goal, or the penalty, how we led up to the penalty, epitomised that, because it was a lovely kind of weighted ball again. You've seen this twice this season, or so far, should I say. First goal against Man United was a beautifully weighted ball from the centre of the field from Jacob Ramsey. This time as well, we looked like we played that same type of run, except from the opposite side. It was John McGinn, and it was a lovely weighted pass by Buendia. McGinn gets his foot to it, a stonewall penalty all day long. I don't think McGinn was ever thinking of anything else other than playing for the penalty, but it was a stonewall penalty all day long. And Danny Ings steps up and blasts it down the centre, even though Spanish Bob got his hand to it. Talk to me about that passage of play, Paddy, because I've sat here and I've screamed about Steven Gerrard's tactics even last season, that we had to go wide and we had no opportunities to play through the centre. And even when Aaron Danks was here, we started to utilise the centre of the field more, and we have the players that seem to be able to play in there. And Unai Emery has certainly shown that we've got players that can do that, considering he's used two different sets of personnel in those forward positions. But talk to me about it.
He has, and he'll learn an awful lot about a lot of those players in the next few weeks. The way I saw the formation was a 4-2-2-2, yeah. But it's a 4-2-4-0 when we lose the ball. That's what I got from yesterday. You know, Danny Ings dropped back in we obviously had the two sixes and then a bank of four there blocking off that midfield, and it worked incredibly well without the ball. Obviously we didn't get a whole pile of chances, but you know, those slide rule passes, there's nothing like them. There's absolutely nothing like them when they come off. I know it wasn't directly a goal, but, you know, McGinn got across his man very well. And absolute stonewall penalty for me as well.
Yeah, and I thought McGinn played a bit better. Actually, that was his best game of the season, I think, so far.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was actually really happy with how he played. And I've no problem saying it. That, like, in the team sheet tantrum, we were here and we were kind of not questioning, but I was talking about, listen, it's coming to the stage whereby, okay, there's faith been shown in him being played here. Now, this last game before the World Cup, he kind of needs to have a bit of a performance, because this World Cup break could scupper his chances as we go forward. Yes, we could have two opportunities here for him. He could go on and he could fit into the system. He might just be picking it up a bit slower than the other players. Mm. That's absolutely a possibility, but he comes out in this game, he's played in a different position, utilised completely differently, and his skill set is utilised. He dropped back into a right wing back position an awful lot when we were in defence, specifically then when Ashley Young came on as well. Ashley Young dropped back into that position too as well, so they were kind of alternating in there. But we were going to kind of a five at the back to kind of see out the game, sometimes a six at the back. That's why Kamara stayed on the field. I thought Kamara was brilliant as well. I really did. But you could see he needs minutes in the legs. For the last 10 minutes, he was economical with his movement. And that's absolutely fine. Remember when we spoke about Leo Dendonker against Manchester United? Leo was in the right spaces at the right time. Kamara was doing that. He wasn't getting on the ball. He wasn't influencing it as much anymore. And that's absolutely okay. And I think that's sometimes a criticism of John McGinn. And that's why I'm saying this as well, is McGinn needs to know how to use his energy. He needs to know how to use his hustle. He's a scamperer around the field. I won't say he's lightning fast because he's not, but he scampers around the field. But sometimes he's like a terrier running after a ball. And that's, we've said that about him before. Whereas you see the guys who are maybe playing that central defensive midfielder position, play as a six hybrid eight like the Dendonkers and the Kamaras, they begin to get economical with their movement. They begin to start stuffing up passing lanes. They begin to drop maybe back into that back four. That's never been McGinn's game. But if McGinn can learn that, and I think he will have to learn that over this break to be economical so that he isn't pulled out of position, I think it could be something for McGinn. But fair play to him. I thought he played really well. That run for the penalty, I thought, was really good. And, you know, without him making that run, I'm not really 100% sure we would have fashioned anything. So he kind of took a chance with that and broke from his structure. And a great ball from Emi Buendia, and fair play to him. You know, credit him when he does something well, for sure.
I definitely think the system suited McGinn yesterday. If you recall, in the last 10 minutes, he went down twice with cramp, which would suggest he did a whole lot more running than he usually does in when he's, you know, in whatever position he's been for the last couple of years. I don't remember McGinn ever going down with cramp. So the same could be said of Kamara. Kamara got 90 minutes under his belt. If anyone was to pull out of that French team, he'd be the first one on the plane, I would imagine, should the call come. Not that the selfish person that I can be is not bothered about the French team. I'd love to see him be a big part of the next 6 weeks. I know they go on holidays for a while now, but when they come back and go for their warm weather training, that, you know, the team is built around players like him, and it's important to have him around the team. So, you know, we've what, five players going to Qatar, is that right?
Four, is it that?
Ash, Bednarak, Martinez
and Dendonker. I think that's it. We've only four going. Well, you see, with Brighton's team, Brighton have 8 or 9 going. And that's something we'll talk about. I've got a whole podcast on that later on in the week about how I think that this, you know, we are in a favorable position. Even you look at other teams in the Premier League, we've got far less players going. When you think about it, Martinez is our goalkeeper, Cash is our right back, but Dendonker and Bednarak didn't start this game. So realistically, and if you think about it, you know, with the interchangeability of Ashley Young coming in there for Cash and has done at times this season, realistically, we're only missing out on Emi Martinez. And I know people are going to go, yeah, but I don't even want Robin Olsen getting those reps in training after his performance against Manchester United. But look, that's the way it's got to be, because I'm sure they're not going to be flying Emi Martinez back and forth from Dubai to Qatar. Although you could fly from Dubai to Qatar and his time off, so that they could get that game time in. I don't know. it would be a stretch too far for me, for sure. But I do have a piece on that that we might do towards the end of the week. So Paddy, after that, I think very much so. After we scored, I thought Brighton were very huff and puffy. I never really felt like they had Welbeck up front. I don't think he played well at all. You know, they couldn't get the ball into him. Lallana going off injured early. There was a big deal made of that by the guys in commentary, but I don't think himself or Trossard really did much in the game. And I think we did a really good job of stifling their play, Paddy. And we got in at half time 1-1. While I never felt that we were going, we were the aggressors in the game at all, for sure. But I felt that, you know, that we were holding our own. We were obviously letting them have possession. We were soaking it up away from home. We were happy to be 1-1. But I never felt like we were under massive pressure. Other than that corner kick, was that in the first half? It was that corner kick where Emi Martinez had to scramble across. He was in awful position for that, by the way. But he had to scramble across, made a great save. And apart from that, I can't think of too many other chances that they had that really opened us up, Paddy. But am I missing something in the first half, maybe, that happened?
No, well, I think their one major chance they created was their goal. So there was another corner which was whipped in near post, which he had to react quickly to get away. And as you mentioned, that one that he just got his fingertip to take it off someone's head, which was vitally important. People are saying he didn't have a particularly good day, Martinez. You know, I think if you look at the performance on a whole for most of the players, it looked to me like it was all part of a learning process, and they were sent out to do their job properly and not to do anything extravagant. I just thought it was just one of those days where we just needed to grind out a result. We did it. We did it efficiently. We kept them at bay. They never laid a glove on us in the second half. Never even looked like scoring. And while the 6 minutes against Man United, when we were ahead 3-1 and still thought we could throw it away, I knew it was, even at 8 minutes, I knew there was absolutely no way they were getting anything out of this game. They just couldn't break us down, which is great. Because once you're hard to beat, there's a good chance you're going to go and win matches.
You know, my catchphrase that I nearly need to get tattooed at this stage is, if you become a must-not-lose team. You know, there's, to me, every game is a must-not-lose game, but not every game is a must-win game. You know, and if you can get into that mentality, that's half the battle, you know. Grinding out draws and coming away and going, okay, we weren't at our best today, but we've come away from somewhere like Brighton, you know, Villa of the past, come away from somewhere like Brighton with a point. And we do have a very good record against Brighton since we've been in the Premier League. But it's... what's this one? Wrong one.
Blatant header at the end. They did get a good chance with a header at the end.
That was at the very, very end of the game. Yeah, we're getting at the second half play in a moment, I think. But
that's why we have you here, Martin, to remind us and keep us in check.
Yeah. But the second half, I think the second half started, and I think that Aston Villa kind of, I'm not going to say we couldn't get a foothold in the game. We couldn't grab it by the scruff of the neck as such. We were able to play in fits and starts. We're very much an Emery-type team. You know, you look at any of his best days with Villarreal, that's how he played. Difficult to break down, frustrating, never looking like we're conceding possession, but you always then you look at it at the end of the day and you go, Jesus, Villa only had, what, 35% possession in the game or something along the lines like that. So that's what it is. It's very much a lull into a false sense of security. And I think it's a brilliant tactic to have away from home because it works against both sides of the aisle. There'll be some days where we will come away and go, ooh, Villa looked awful. You know, today we didn't look awful, but we came away with a win. And look, to be honest with you, over 38-game season, that's brilliant. That's exactly what you want to be, because there's only one or two Man Cities in the league at the moment that can go out there and wow teams and put five on teams away from home, or even the likes of Arsenal at the moment. And I think Aston Villa, we are, as Michael Hogan said there, and I can't find it, he goes, the Red Brick Palace wasn't built in a day. You know, you got to grind out those victories, you got to grind out those draws. But this second half was very much a grinding experience, I think, within the game. Obviously, there's been accusations of horrendous time-wasting, filthy play because of the yellow cards, although a lot of them were for time-wasting. But look, that's just professional nature of the game, I think, at this moment in time. Last game before the World Cup, Villa needed to come away with something.
Yeah.
Martinez gets booked. McGinn gets booked for time wasting. As you mentioned, we haven't got to our goal yet, but their only real chance came from Levi Colwell, who had a free header that, you know, he should really be just picking his side there and running off and celebrating. But I think first start, if I'm not mistaken, as a centre-half for Brighton, and he got caught in the headlights. I think there, and thankfully for us, he put it about 20 yards wide. But we had a similar situation whereby the ball was crossed in from Matty Cash. Some brilliant work from Matty Cash down that right-hand side. Crossed the ball in, and Emi Buendia, with what it would have been, goal of the week. Unbelievable leap, like a salmon from such a small man. And he was like a missile when he headed it from the penalty spot. Crashes back off the post. And what I loved about this is when you look at this goal back again, when that ball comes off the post, Matty Cash seems to come back out towards the edge of the box. Then he sees Douglas Luiz get the ball, and maybe Douglas Luiz turns around and he's thinking that maybe we're going to recycle that ball backwards as opposed to going to Mings or going to Ings. And you see Matty Cash pelt it backwards to get back into position straight away again. And that's something we hadn't been seeing for the last 10 games previously. That's 10 games that he's played, maybe the last year that Aston Villa have played. We haven't seen our fullbacks get back into position. But while he was absolutely legging it back, Danny Ings pulls an absolutely outrageous shimmy inside in the box and then kicks it in off some fella's heel, and it just squirts in wrong foot Spanish Bob and into the back of the net, and we go 2-1 up. Not the greatest finish in the world. I don't think he even wanted to celebrate it because it was such a ridiculous deflection, but that little shimmy and that little dummy and that little drop of the shoulder was absolutely fantastic from Danny Ings. And if we can continue to see that through the course of the season, then hashtag Team Paddy will be in fine voice on these podcasts.
Well, I said it before and I'll say it again. You miss 100% of the chances you don't fucking hit. He took the shot. It hit off his knee, the way it went through his legs. But look, it went in. Once it passes that white line and hits the net, I'm a happy man. I don't care who scores it. If it's Ollie Watkins, it's Ollie Watkins. If it's Danny Ings, even better. But, you know, we created the chances and we took them when we got them. So, It really doesn't matter how we score, but you're right in giving the big shout out to Emi Buendia. I in reality, it's probably a poor ball from Matty Cash. He put too much phase on it, and Buendia adjusted his body, improvised, got his head onto it, bullet header, and then the work rate to win the ball back so quickly in the transition was fantastic. So hats off to them, because as you say, you know, even that, the hard work for Matty Cash to get back to where he needed to be, these are all the things that Unai Emery is going to be looking for in all the games, is the work rate, is players knowing their jobs, is players being clever enough to get back into their positions. And it will all, I'm pretty sure this will come together. You know, I'm actually, for one, with that first goal we conceded, it's probably a good thing that we conceded that this week and we got 6 weeks off. Not only have we got time to work on it and be more careful and you know, put a plan in place for when that does happen. 6 weeks' time, when we play Liverpool, it won't really matter because they're going to high press us anyway. So there'll be very little risks taken in that department, I would imagine. But we could do it the 6 weeks off for people to forget that we made that decision and try not to be pushing up on us. I'm sure they won't. You know, there's plenty of coaches out there watching everything and watching everything back. But, you know, I'd have much preferred, having watched it back afterwards, I would have much preferred to grind out that 2-1 win today or yesterday than go and win 3-0. It's just, I just think it's a much better win to come from behind, to show the grit, to show personality, to show everybody, like to a man, they all did their jobs. They all did what they were asked to do. You know, we got a fortuitous winner, but I would have much preferred to win that way than go out and be 3-0 up at halftime and win 3-0. That's just my opinion. I think it was an important structured win when you think about it. Whatever about going and winning away from home, after conceding a calamity goal so early on as well, I think that shows good character for the team going forward.
And I think James Cartwright has a great comment up here as well. Biggest credit for the game goes to what Unai did with the tactics, especially at the end, and the players looked like they knew exactly what to do. I think the players knew that there would. I think they knew that there was obviously a game plan. They knew that there would be a situation of how would I put it? They had gamed out different kind of simulations, if you want, for the game. This is what we'll do in this instance. Okay, if we're 1-0 up going into the last 15 minutes, this is what Brighton like to do. We need to huddle in the middle of the field. This is what their tendencies are. We don't need Trossard getting any space. We can let Casado have it back there as long as we don't let him advance with the ball. That's where you're going to come in, Emi Buendia. You're going to be all over him like white on rice. But if Trossard gets anywhere near the ball, Buba, we might have to run you into the ground, but you've got 6 weeks off after this. Any twinges in your knee, let us know. We'll take you off. We're going to bring Leo on for this person. You know, all this kind of stuff. You'd imagine that's going on in every single dressing room for days before the game, that they're going to game out these types of simulations so that people are looking at the clocks and they're going, right, 15-minute intervals, this is what we do. This is the formation we look at. In this instance here, we're 1-1. Okay, let's get tight. Remember, guys, we're going to come in narrow. Our 8 is going to drop back into a more withdrawn role, maybe just patrol that the midfield circle. Our 6s are going to retire deep as well. And we're just going to play tight for the next 15 minutes coming up to halftime. If we're 1-1 away from home, then we're going to regroup. We're going to get out in the second half. And this is the way we're going to expand. So I like that. You can actually kind to see things like that with Unai Emery. You can see when they go into that pseudo six at the back. I hate saying that a team plays six at the back because they don't really play six at the back consciously. It just happens because people withdraw in there. I've seen it a couple of times that, like, oh, Unai Emery likes to play a 6-3-1. He doesn't like to play a 6-3-1. It's the way that the players filter in when they withdraw back, I would almost guarantee. But I would find it very difficult to see him doing the X's and O's on the whiteboard saying, okay, lads, we need to have a wall of six at the back. But then again, maybe he does. I think it's just the way the players filter back. And that's okay too. But I agree with you, James. You can see this. You can see the way that the team does change shape throughout the game. And you can see that there is a game plan behind that, specifically with the substitutions that were made, because they weren't all like-for-like substitutions. Well, I'm looking back at them here. Ashley Young came on for Jacob Ramsey. You know, Ashley Young came on for Jacob Ramsey, played a small bit further forward. Bailey came on for Buendia. Obviously, Augustinsson came on for Lucadinha. Archer came on for Ings, and Dedocker came on for Luis. So there were some like-for-like, obviously, there towards the end of the game. It was good to see Cameron Archer get some game time. But the Ashley Young for Jacob Ramsey kind of did change it up for us there. And that came early enough as well. That was on the 69th minute. So interesting. Interesting. And as David Stiles says there, it is great that Emery has used all 15 available subs in the 3 games so far. He's an absolute pervert for game management, and I love it. What a comment. That's comment of the day. But Pat, like that's and I'm
going actually to... Neil, you know what, I want to ask David Stiles a question. Can you put in the comments there and tell us if he's in the UK? You know why, don't you?
David Stiles, are you in the UK?
Yes,
I'll ask him.
put your answer in there, David Stiles.
Yeah, you're not. No, you're not going to ask him. Is he Harry's brother?
No,
the podcast for this.
I am, chaps. Okay, David Stiles. He's in the UK. What I'm going to do for giving me such a laugh tonight is we're going to send you one of our pint glasses. So send myself or Neil a DM on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you find us, and we'll send you out a free pint glass for that bit of crack.
Yeah. We do have, for the love of pomegranate, pint glasses. They're embossed pint glasses. They're available, unfortunately, only to people in the UK at the moment because apparently insurance of shipping outside of the UK, and even if we were to get them done here in Ireland, shipping outside of Ireland is mental at the moment for whatever reason. Same reason we couldn't get the mugs out all over the world. So I do apologise about that, but we do have some pint glasses for sale. They're on sale on our crudely put together website at fortheloveofpomegranate.com. You'll be able to find them there. But as I say, that's the fruits of my labor, that website. So don't block it too much because I'm not, as I break one of the coasters, don't mock it too much because I'm not that way inclined to be able to put together websites. It's not my forte for sure. But then again, neither is podcasting, and I'm making a hand at that some way, shape, or form. Paddy, one of the other things I wanted to mention is, we've scored 9 goals, we've conceded 6, we've got 9 points in the league since Gerrard departed. Obviously, since Unai Emery has come in here, we've scored 5 goals, we've conceded.
Yeah, 2.
2. I couldn't remember what score
was. We conceded 6 before them were in the one game.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And that's what I was getting at here. So we scored 4 under Aaron Danks. We conceded 4 under Aaron Danks before those were in the one game. I don't think we concede 4 goals at all against Newcastle If Emery is in here, but hindsight is 2020. I can say that because no one can prove me wrong until we play Newcastle again later on in the season. But what I'm trying to get at here is that the returns for the first two games have been positive. The words that people are saying, and I know, as Ronan Keating once said, it's only words and words are all I have. But Matty Cash is of this world, the Jacob Ramsey's of this world, the Danny Ings of this world, they're coming out and they're going, wow, we're learning stuff off this guy, you know. And I know talk is cheap, but it's nice to hear when you're going into a 6-week break and specifically, you know, your strikers and your forward players are learning about movements and about angles and things like that, and they're bringing it up in conversation as well. That's what we want to hear, Paddy. I'm sure you want to hear the same thing before we go into a 6-week break.
Absolutely. Sorry, I completely wasn't listening to you there. I'm still laughing at some of the comments.
I was saying that it's nice to hear the players saying that they're learning stuff. And while it is only just sound bites and words, the talking will be done
absolutely.
After.
Absolutely. Yeah, break. It's, you know, and how can you not learn from such an infectious man? You can see everything about him is infectious. You know, his English is improving all the time, although I'd imagine he is quite hard to listen to, and you know, it might take a bit of time to get his point across, and I could totally see that. But, you know, this guy is quite obviously, you know, as he says, a pervert for game management. The guy just lives and breathes every second of the game. He's on his feet whole 90 minutes, 98 minutes, as it was at the weekend. It's you know, I'd nearly love there to be a camera up in the corner of the screen. Remember they used to have the player cam at Sky? Just put an Emery cam and leave it on him there and let us watch what he's doing as the game's going on. It's all about game management for him. He's just constantly talking to the players, telling them where they're at. And if something is even 5 yards out of place, he's fixing it as the game is going on. He's fixing and fixing and fixing. And that's what a proper coach does. That's what a proper game manager does. It's absolutely brilliant to watch. I enjoyed it against Man U. I just couldn't take my eyes off him. I thought he was an incredible, you know, where he gets his energy from. You know, I'd say he almost feels like he's played the match when the game is over. So he's obviously very like that. He spends most of his time in a classroom-based tactics. And I'd imagine even more so in the Birmingham weather, he's going to be indoors as well.
That's why they're going to Dubai.
They're going to Dubai, yeah. But look, if you can't learn from him, I don't know who you can learn from. He's been on my radar as a coach for many, many years, and I was actually excited to see him come to the Premier League with Arsenal. I just think he was treated abysmally by them. He didn't do a particularly bad job at all. So I think our job that he has taken on, our project, is absolutely perfect for him. And whoever comes in January, it can only be somebody who he has his homework done on. And there's exciting times ahead, and it should be exciting for the players. I'm sure worrying times for those who are only on the periphery as well, that probably think that their gig is up and there's going to be players coming in to fill their position. And, you know, I trust them. For someone who's only in the club a wet week, I trust them. I trust his decision making. So I'm looking forward to seeing the videos of what they're doing over the next few weeks. I know they're going to be on holidays for 10 days or so.
Looking forward to seeing them putting his scoring goals in training, Paddy. This is a new Paddy. You should have seen that.
No. I don't see them putting it in top corner. As I said to you, myself, give me a bag of balls. I'll make a video and show you putting it in the right corner myself. But just to see, you know, what the next 6 weeks looks like from a training point of view. From, I know somebody else asked in the comments there, was there any other friendlies? There was apparently another friendly which has since been cancelled. It's something got to do with the fact that they can't play a match while there's a World Cup game on, so it's becoming very difficult to fit in friendlies in there. So there'll be. If there's any other games, it'll be behind closed doors. But for now, the only friendly in that 6 weeks is against Villarreal.
That we know of so far.
That we know of so far,
exactly. Yeah. What date is that Villarreal game again, Paddy? 10th, 15th?
16th or something.
15th of December.
It's a Thursday. It's just after the World Cup semi-final.
It's a Thursday. more chance of getting over there on a Thursday than I do on a Saturday or Sunday. I could just pretend I'm going playing. I'm going playing five a side. You're playing 15. Five a side. And five a side at 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And then she won't notice I'm gone. I'll be back then later on that night. It'd be grand. Maybe that'll happen. And you know, like, I can talk about it openly in the podcast because there isn't a hope in hell she's watching the podcast. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah, that I had that starred for later on, Martin. No, I'm not going to start singing after every podcast, every win that we had. I sang once on the podcast properly, and that was when I put my money where my mouth is after we hadn't scored from a set piece in ages, and then Tyrone Mings stepped up the last day of the season or something, or second last day of the season, and stuck in the back of the net.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From a header. So I'll do
a deal with you, Martin. The song that Neil just sang is actually my party piece. So when we qualify for Europe, I'll sing that song.
No. Paddy has multiple party pieces.
I have a few years to prepare.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We might even do that one live somewhere. Yeah, Paddy, your top.
My last top. I presume it's not this one. I presume it's this one he's talking about, which is Deck Pierce's Block Rock and Beats. I presume he knows this is just a training top.
I think it was last year.
This one is Deck Pierce, Block Rock and Beats. He's a DJ here in Ireland who actually does his live shows wearing that shirt. It's basically a mock up of a Villa shirt with Block Rock and Beats on it, and that's what it is. If you don't know who he is, shame on you. Go check him out,
Deck Pierce.
And Deck, if you're listening, I still never got my ticket for Limerick, and if there's any floating around, I need one.
See that talking on the podcast, is God's sake.
So thanks for that, IJL82, for letting me put that there. Awful shout out to look for a ticket.
Exactly. Alan Healy says, this is something I meant to mention, and I've it started and I forgot to get back to it when I was on my whole Decaturness and about talking about Emery and that they're learning. I meant to highlight this as well, but I did love that as well. The team pulled together into a huddle at the final whistle. You could see the passion there that I haven't seen for some while. That was very much led by Emmy Martinez, I think, as well, because a couple of people mentioned there as well, and apologies, I don't have the comments here in front, that you loved the kind of shithousery that Emmy Martinez brought yesterday. And look, I think, it winds up other fans and stuff like that, but you know, that's the difference. That's what can, you know, when you're an underdog and when you're a team who's down in your luck, like Aston Villa have been, you know, a couple of these gritty us against the world victories, and that game against Brighton was an us against the world victory. That game against Manchester United was an us against the world victory. You know, little things like that mean things. Emi Martinez probably wanted to win that game more than anyone else because he knew for certain at that stage he was going to the World Cup. I suppose Matty Cash did as well, but Martinez has worn a captain's armband for us. Villa, you can see he's bought into the club, he's bought into the ethos around the club and stuff, and I was delighted to see him driving it on within there, and he was making sure that all the fans went down to the away end and they gave it large in front of the away end, and you know, sometimes you criticise a manager for walking down the tunnel, but Emery has won twice, and the first thing he does is shake a hand and go down the tunnel and gets things ready for the debrief or whatever else he has to do. And lets the players soak it up. And I thought that that was the right thing to do. I think it's definitely been the right thing to do both times, because Unai Emery is a man of action. He doesn't want to be the man of many words, specifically in the media. Mm. And as I say, your actions speak on the field. So
yeah.
Like you, Alan, I love that too.
The one thing I will bring the tone down a little bit, I'm not overly enthused at the time wasting. As anybody who listens to the podcast will know, I really don't like cheating in any form. So that falls under the umbrella of cheating for me. I don't like it. I'd rather he didn't do so much of it. I know you have to take this thing out of games and go down injured and stuff. That's probably not his job. We can get away with it a whole lot easier. It just sickens me that we're on the tip of the tongue of the media and they're giving out about us. And you know, to have eight minutes at the end of the match shows that, you know, that one of these days that will bite us on the arse. We had six against Man U. There was never 6 minutes there to be added.
No, we weren't time wasting against Man United though.
We were a little bit. Emmy was a little bit. So I would just like that's two yellow cards now he has for time wasting, which also means if he does it five times, we have to put Robin Olsen back in goal. So let's just tone it down a little bit, or let the other players go down injured and spread it out like the big clubs do. But when they do it, it's called game management. But for us, because it's little old Aston Villa, we don't get the same respect.
Well, there was also, so think of it this way as well, Paddy. There was also 9 substitutions in the second half. So, like, when we're talking about the eight minutes injury time, we're going to start seeing more injury time, because if you have to give the requisite 30 seconds, that's 9 minutes. That's 9 substitutions. That means that's four and a half of those added minutes were because of substitutions. That's if you are to give that. Now, look, obviously, Ashley Young nearly halves a fella with an absolute blatant yellow card tackle to try and stop Brighton from making any inroads. Yes, you might say that was a dirty challenge. Boubacar Kamara gets booked hot in the heels of that. And then the two boys get booked for time wasting in 90 plus 7. So, look, I suppose it is what it is with regards to that. But I think it's important to mention that the 8 minutes, the 90 plus 8, and you see the 8 minutes added time in the Brentford game as well, where Ivan Toney pops up and scores that goal. I think we're going to start seeing longer injury times because people are going to be making 2 and 3 substitutions at a time. I'm actually looking here. It was 8 substitutions in the second half. So that's 4 minutes of injury time were taken up by subs. And yeah, you probably could say that the other 4 might have been because of the time wasting. But I don't think there was 4 minutes of time wasting. Anyway, that's beside the point. But you're right in what you're saying.
Seeing as we've won the game again, and we can call out Chris Kavanagh for his absolute travesty of dishing out yellow cards. He booked Kamara for a high foot, which hit a fella's knee, and yet Wave Playama Matty Cash gets kicked in the head for a high foot. It just begs belief what he's at, what game he's looking at. I just thought some of the yellow cards were particularly poor. He's a poor referee. There's plenty of poor referees out there, and when we win, we can call them out. He may or may not have got the penalty decision wrong as well. I probably would have given it in real time, and if he'd have given it in real time, it wouldn't have been overruled by VAR as a clear and obvious error, I don't think.
Here we go with this one. He's completely, like, before he ever comes into screen, he's completely committed to the act of taking a shot. I think, in that instance, like, Tyrone Mings gets booked for what Sonny Marsh does against Arsenal, yet. And people were saying he should have been sent off. Remember that Tyrone Mings tackle where he gets the ball and his momentum takes him into Bakary Saka? And then people were saying he should have been sent off. It was an awful tackle. And then that happens then in the box when a guy is committed to kicking the ball. He didn't kick through him after he won the ball. He was in the middle of kicking the ball when Sonny Marsh comes in there. But Sonny Marsh was never in control of that ball. So for them to be so definite in the fact that was a penalty, I think there's way too much nuance with regards to it. And I think, look, once again, that one was for VAR. And you can say, he kicked him. Yeah, he did. But at the end of the day, it was in the act of striking the ball when Sonny Marsh stuck his foot in there. So who needs to be protected in that instance?
Was it against Brighton last year that Trezeguet got kicked? And
yes. Didn't...
Was that Brighton as well?
I'm certain that was Brighton. Was it against Brighton where Trezeguet went down like he was shot?
But he was kicked.
No, remember the one where Trezeguet went down and started holding his face?
Brentford, wasn't it? That one. Yeah.
That was Brentford. Yeah.
But like, for me, Solly Marsh knew what he was doing. He kept going with that intention of running into the player to try and force the hand of a decision. It's probably not a penalty, but you could see why it would be given. Also a shout out for that handball, because someone that close for us had a hand out like that last week or a couple of weeks ago, and we got a penalty against us. Can't remember what game it was. Leeds, was it?
No,
we Matty Cash. Didn't play against Leeds. Matty Cash handled the ball.
No, Matty Cash didn't play against Leeds.
Maybe I'm dreaming. No, wasn't there a player that was hand out like that and it hit his hand? I can't remember. Completely escaping you. I had it on the tip of my tongue earlier and I can't remember. I just think 7 yellow cards. We're going to get a letter from the FA warning us about a future conduct and failing to control our players. And it wasn't a dirty fucking game.
No, no, there's no context in it whatsoever. And that's another joke shop. You look back at it and you go, okay, if so.
And also the yellow card he gave to Jacob Ramsey, because he fucked up, he should have played the advantage. Jacob Ramsey was one-on-one with the last defender and he slams the ball off the ground and he books him for it. He books him for calling him out for being an absolute idiot of a referee. That's what he was doing.
There you go.
How frustrating that must be for a player. You have to have some kind of savvy and go, okay, JJ, calm down. I got it wrong. Okay, we go again. Yeah. You know, not throwing out a yellow card, because how dare you react like that to my poor decision? Because that's exactly what it was. It was a poor decision. I don't think he even gave out a yellow card there, did he? He gave the yellow card to Ramsey, but he didn't give it to the obvious yellow card that he stopped the game for, which was why I thought he was stopping the game, was for a yellow card.
Yeah.
Anyway, we won't go on about it anymore.
We can't. And I had a point, and I can't remember what it is, but we're 48 minutes, nearly 49 minutes into the podcast. Oh, yes, that's what it was. Did Young have a handball in the cup game?
Oh, his hand was up, though, wasn't it? Yeah, that was a handball. But I'm nearly sure there was one given with a hand down.
Somebody's saying that, that it might have been Cash in the Forest game.
That's what I thought.
Leeds was 0-0. You know, are we both clicking on the same comment there, Paddy? Is that why it won't show? Are we both clicking it towards?
Cash's handball was versus Fulham.
Was it against Fulham? Did Fulham score a penalty? Maybe so. Anyway, look, there was a handball somewhere. Okay, well, all our handballs are never handballs, and we're going to give out about them anyway. But every handball against us should have been a penalty for us, even if we don't get it. That's just the nature of being fickle, as I said. I'm an Aston Villa fan. I'm fickle. I'm allowed to change my mind whenever I want. And that's just the rules of the game. But guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to leave it at that. As I say, if you are interested in the pint glasses, the Aston Villa, or the For the Love of Pomegranate pint glasses, as I'm looking around for the one I brought out with me, but I must have left it somewhere else in my office here. They are available on our website, fortheloveofpomegranate.com. You'll see them there. They're the only thing in the merch store at the moment. You've got two options. You can get the glass on its own, or you can get the glass with a glass coaster with the crest embossed as well there. You can take a look whichever option you would like. We would be delighted to provide you with them. As I said, they are UK only, unfortunately, at this moment in time, but if anything changes, you guys will be the first to know. Also, this podcast today, and I should have said it at the very start, it is sponsored by Fettle, which is a therapy company, a counselling service that we are delighted to be partnered up with. They're an Irish-based counselling service. They will offer counselling anywhere. It's over. It's done via video link on fettle.ie. Basically, you'll be paired up with any with the therapist that does suit you, and they offer a multitude of different counseling services, from bereavement to addiction counseling to depression, anxiety, anger management, which some of us might need after these podcasts at times. I don't want to, and I do jest when I say that, and I don't want to be too flippant about it, but some of the services that they do provide are here. So obviously, anything to do with trauma, bereavement, anger management, cognitive processing, dialect behavior, cognitive behavior, even acceptance and commitment therapy as well, for anything like that. As I say, they're a great company, and with it being November, and while we want everybody to look after their mental health, but obviously November is men's mental health awareness, or men's health awareness month, and looking after your physical health is one thing, but looking after your mental health can enlighten you, can open up everything, can open up the whole world to you as well. So we would say, if you are looking for therapy, for online therapy from trained and from professional therapists, fettle.ie, do give them a look out and do give them a shout. Matt Hallinan, thank you so much again for that. Really appreciate your donation to the podcast. That is very, very kind. And thank you so much.
Matt.
So thanks very much, everybody. We will leave it at that. We are going to be back. Don't worry. World Cup break means nothing to us. We will be back. We have next week. We will actually, towards the end of this week, we will be back with a podcast. I might even be here on my own. I don't know. I haven't even asked Paddy. Just discussing what our fortunes would be, I think, during the break. And then we have, I have a full 3 podcast slate scheduled in for the week after. I will also be doing some scouting series on players that I find interesting throughout the World Cup. I also have a South American scouting series that I'm working on at the moment for some young players that I think would be great fit for Aston Villa, or great fit for any club. If you're interested in finding out about new players, whether they're linked with Aston Villa or not, well, listen, drop along and give us a vote, a view, and give us a watch. Also, any transfer rumours that do pop up between now and then, except for Eden Hazard, who I will refuse to do a podcast on unless he's holding the shirt on the field, I will do a podcast on anyone we're linked to. I've got a bank lined up already from the likes of Marcus Thuram to Nacho Fernandez. So, we've been linked to lots of players, and I will be releasing those over the World Cup break as well. So going to try and get through as many podcasts as we can. There could be a lot of scouting series. If they're your bag, please give them a listen. If not, well, then please give them a listen anyway, because I'd really appreciate it. And you never know, you might get to know one or two things about players. But thank you so much for everything. We have a bit of a break, as I say, from Aston Villa football for the time being, for the next 6 weeks. Enjoy the time off. Enjoy maybe watching different types of football, and hopefully you enjoy watching some of the content that we have coming out over the next few weeks as well.
Very, very quickly before you go, Neil, one of our listeners asked me to remind people that the Aston Villa ladies do play in Villa Park against Reading this weekend. Great bit of entertainment for a very reasonable price. I think it's £10, if memory serves me correct, and I'll have to check it out. I think it's 5 for kids. But get along and support them if you're in a position to do so. A good day out. They're really good with the kids there after the game as well. So bring along the girls. It's their game too. Bring your young girl along. It'll be a good way to get them involved in supporting the club as well.
Richie Ryan, I forgot to mention this as well. I'm efforting on beanies. It's going to be the start of December if I get them in, because I have to do the fulfillment for those myself. But keep an eye on Twitter if you are looking for a beanie hat before Christmas. Fingers crossed, I should have something on that towards the start of December. Limited stock, I'll try and get them as well. But anyway, that's less of the selling stuff here, because it's more about wanting you guys to come back for more chats throughout the World Cup break, because that's what we're all about. So guys, thank you so much for this. Aston Villa going on a 2-match winning spree. We are winning spree. Do 2-match consider is that considered a spree? I'm going to call it a spree.
It is for us.
It is for us. That's right. Yeah, it is for us. So let's enjoy it while we can. As I say, we're now on 18 points in the Premier League. Little old Manchester United are on 26. Liverpool are on 22. And they're in 5th and 6th, with Brighton in 7th place on 21 points. So while I'm not saying that the European football is an absolute given, and Paddy is going to have to sing some Ronan Keating songs, we're not a million miles away from it, or we're not as far away from it, because there is a very much a concertinaed Premier League season this season. But that's all to be written once we come back from the World Cup. Thanks very much for watching. Up the Villa. Great win. And I hope you all stay safe and stay healthy. And we will be back again later on this week. We would love if you could join us. So thanks so much. And we'll see you later. Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.